ANDGLITTER.
Oh, and when is the show? It's Saturday, right? This Saturday?
Yes, Coming Glitter.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, this Saturday.
Okay. And when is your one-woman show?
December 21st and 22nd.
Okay. Right now, I'm in a secret location, and I'm standing next to Dorian Faust. Do you know who Dorian Faust is? I knew who Dorian. Then I was like, oh, the Dorian Faust. It was so exciting. Welcome to Sexploration with Monica.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
My pleasure.
This is sex. Everyone gets what they want. This is Sexploration.
Explore. Play.
This is Sexploration with Monica. Sex is proof that God loves us and wants us to have fun.
Sexploration with Monica at sexplorationwithmonica.com.
You are going to be doing not only an act in Come and Glitter, but you also have a one-woman show coming up.
Yes, I do. It's called my one-woman obligatory self-promotional mind bloop.
Oh, yes. The F word, right?
Yes, yes.
Yes, I've heard that word before. Excellent. Thank you for bleeping yourself out. That's very considerate.
Totally.
Most people, I have to do it for them.
Yeah, I'm used to having to censor myself on the radio. So.
Aren't we all?
Yes.
It's so annoying. Why do we have to censor ourselves? But I think it is important that at least we get to talk about what we need to talk about in terms of consent and expression and beauty and sexiness, even though sometimes we have to choose less effective words.
Exactly. Boundaries and feelings. Hashtag.
Exactly. 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 By the way, her Twitter handle is @dfaustsamo on Twitter. So that's DFAUSTSAMO because the hashtag thing, that's all about Twitter. I just want to keep you connected. And so Come and Glitter is coming up this Saturday, and there's a matinee show and there's an evening show, and you can buy tickets at comeandglitter.com, and that's C-U-M. We're not kidding. comeandglitter.com, isn't that right?
Yes.
And tell me about your performance.
For this show, I will be doing a 20-minute burlesque turbation piece.
Burlesque turbation. Exciting.
I will be transforming from Eve all the way into Satan, Lucifer.
Hmm.
I will be illustrating the fall of Eve through masturbation. And then I will be also transforming into Lucifer and leaving the stage.
Okay, I have a question about Eve, because isn't Eve naked?
Yes, but
in your interpretation, she's wearing clothes and going to take them off, or how does that work?
In my interpretation, she's wearing a bikini that looks like flowers, so it's kind of like
a
burlesque interpretation of nature.
Well, they often do that in, like, Christian Sunday school, the Adam and Eve. They always had flowers in front of their genitals. You would never actually see them naked. So you also mentioned Lilith.
Lilith got kicked out of the garden for not wanting to do it missionary style.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I feel like I'm going to do a commentary on dominant women and mm-hmm. how when a woman tries to take control of her sexuality and the way that she does things, she gets persecuted.
Right.
So
she didn't want to be on the bottom.
It's true. She was a top.
Tell me about your one-woman show.
My one-woman show is going to be at the Garage in San Francisco, and it's going to be a commentary and also a retrospective on my 4 years of being a burlesque performer, which is actually not a very long time. I'm still considered a baby, which is cool, but a lot has gone on in my career in those past 4 years, and I would like to talk about race politics, racial politics mm-hmm. in the entertainment scene, especially mm-hmm. the burlesque community, mm-hmm. and how I've come to be sort of a fringe theatrical / adversarial figure in the burlesque community.
Well, Come and Glitter has got to be completely perfect for you.
Absolutely.
I mean, because, okay, let me tell you about Come and Glitter. If you didn't listen to the last show, which you should, to bone up. It's a co-op, first of all. It's not like this hierarchical thing where someone makes the money and everyone tells someone else what to do and blah, blah, blah. But each performer defines their own act. You write your script yourself. You're like, what? How would I like to express myself?
It's true, yeah.
And it's a live sex show.
Yes, and that is the other big thing about my performance this weekend is that it will be my first time doing any sort of sexual act on stage.
How do you feel about that?
I'm absolutely terrified and nervous, really? But, you know, I'm not doing it with anyone else, which makes me feel a little bit more comfortable. Mm-hmm. And I'm also, I have a little leeway because I can act if I don't turn myself on enough.
Well, you know, I can only imagine, because there's a lot of performance anxiety for people, even when they're just having sex at a sex party, or even they're having sex in front of someone else. There's only one person there. So I can only imagine what it could be like to have sex or try to be turned on in front of, I mean, okay, first of all, Come and Glitter is a very friendly crowd. Like, they're all sex positive people. They're all people in the community. You're not going to get into Come and Glitter if you don't know someone who's cool. Or maybe you just listen to Sexploration with Monica, and that makes you cool too. But anyway, so it's a really friendly crowd, you know? Yeah. And I think, have you thought about, like, all of the things that you could do to make yourself feel more safe and turned on?
Yeah, I have, you know, my pre-show ritual, which includes lots of sex and eating chocolate beforehand.
Oh,
and
that's awesome.
Yeah, and taking lots of really annoying pictures on Instagram to get all those likes and get that extra ego boost. Hey, I'm being honest about it.
No,
we all
totally
do it. So, you know, that definitely helps. And tweeting incessantly and, you know, OkCupiding.
Oh, I love OkCupid. That is the funnest thing. Okay. So if you are dating, if you want to try a really fun website, OkCupid. No, it's the algorithm and all the boys. It's so fun. And it's really alternative. And you can be bisexual or polyamorous or in a relationship or just looking around or whatever. And it's really cool. So let's talk more about your one-woman show.
They have it listed in The Guardian as Burlesque's Basquiat, which actually is my tagline. This is like a secondary name. My one woman, obligatory, self-promotional mind.
Beep. And that word starts with an F, just in case you were not sure. Okay, you can find her at queenofindieburlesque.com. Mm-hmm. And since your show is about race politics in sex performance world, in the sex worker world,
right, yeah,
you must have had some experiences that made you reflect on what's going on in burlesque around being a performer of color.
Yes, absolutely. And there are a lot of other performers of color who are having those same experiences. And I feel like I'm not speaking for them, but I do know that a lot of them are trying to make it in a more mainstream burlesque vein. And for me, I've found my way on the fringes of theater and sex performance world, underground performance art. So I feel like I can sustain something that I've created for myself and that I've found through other avenues, and that those people who want to speak up and who want to say something may not ever do it because they want to be.
I know you want to be popular, and you want to, you know, you want to get chosen for the role, and you want to be not shaking the boat.
Yeah, and I'm known as the adversarial naysayer, and you know what? That's
you're
fine.
Shake the boat.
Yes.
Excellent. So tell me about some of your experiences, some of the challenges that you've had working in the burlesque industry.
Well, I'm a classically trained dancer, and I do put a lot into my costumes and my concepts and ideas, and but
she sews and makes shoes, and she's wearing the most fabulous shoes right now. They're like gold and have tassels on them, like lots of tassels. It's awesome.
The issue that I've run into the most is people with less talent getting booked before me due to the fact that they're a safer performer or easier to swallow for the good times, you know, like for very one-dimensional audience. And I feel like I cater to a more, and this is going to get me in so much trouble, but it's okay.
Do it.
I feel like I cater to a more intelligent, artful, intellectual crowd than most burlesque shows do. So I don't get booked.
You make people think while you're taking off your clothes.
Yes.
How dare you? You're rocking the moon again. Why?
Yeah, and that's what I prefer to do. I mean, even when I'm dating, like, I can't just be with someone for the looks. It's all about the mind.
And yeah, are you kidding?
Yeah.
I know. I've tried it. It's like, woo, this is, you look like Tom Cruise, but oh, okay. Yeah. No, I really need a very low level of misogyny in my relationships.
Absolutely.
Right? So it's really important. And I think that's true. Like, you know, when you're working in the sex industry or as a sex worker, as a performer, as a porn performer, as a burlesque dancer, any of those things, I think that that kind of makes you more vulnerable because people are saying, oh, well, you have to do it this way. And, oh, I really want this. And, you know, oh, you're a slut. And kind of, you know, there's this judgment there. And so it must be really difficult.
There are a lot of expectations around, like, oh, you won't shoot nude? Well, you're a burlesque performer, so that must mean you'll shoot nude, you know? Right. Or, oh, you won't.
And then punishing you if you don't.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, I'm not a good schmoozer. I'm personal. I think I'm approachable, but
you don't suck up to people?
I'm not good at bullshitting.
How dare you?
Yeah. So I don't I don't get booked for that reason either. Mm-hmm. I continue, I'm persistent when I want a booking, but mm-hmm. it's more based on a business mind and, mm-hmm. and a drive and a want and a need to put my work on stage in a creative way that I can convey what's going on in my artistic mind to other people and to share my art with people, not to like sleep with every...
Yeah, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. you're not really into the casting couch?
Not really.
Yeah, me not neither, actually. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's see how far it's gotten my career. Have you made a burlesque act that's about race?
I have yet to do that. I'm working on a Huey P. Newton inspired number right now, Black Panther Party, exploration of what Huey went through after he got released from prison, the craziness that went on in his head before he passed away.
How are you going to tell that story?
I'm going to come on stage in like a fringe-covered Black Panther outfit and then have some panthers on stage that are glitzy, but they're going to also look psychotic. So there's going to be like apparitions of everything that goes on in an activist's mind through those panthers, and how something that, you know, is within the activist to fight the social norms and things that can be limiting can turn into monsters that can destroy the person from the inside out. So
that sounds fabulous.
Yeah, it's good. It's a work in progress because I don't want to put it on stage without it being perfect. Mm-hmm. So I am looking forward to doing it.
And where do you usually perform, like your burlesque stuff? Where can people find you?
I have my own show, Livid Cult Burlesque Theater, that is looking for a venue right now. Our venue changed hands in Oakland, and we are currently looking for a nice DIY theater space that is willing to work with us on getting our show out there. So I perform with my own troupe, but I also, Come and Glitter is pretty much the only space, sometimes at Red Hot's Burlesque, though, because they allow me to perform, because Dottie
do crazy stuff. Oh, I know. Isn't Dottie amazing?
Yes.
She does this wonderful act that's about body image, and we did interview her, I think, in November of 2011. So you can like look back in there, and there's a gorgeous picture of Dottie looking all smart and sexy.
Yeah, she's awesome. Yeah. So there's always space for me there, which makes me very comfortable. Mm-hmm. And then right now I'm just working on doing more fringe events that are not necessarily catered to burlesque. So any sort of like art gallery opening, that's what I'm trying to break into. So I'm actually going very, very slowly with booking lately. But that's only because I'm being more particular and trying to make myself more of a rarity. So
that sounds really exciting.
Yes, it is exciting. And
I'm fulfilling. Looking forward to your one-woman show. So how can people find tickets to your one-woman show?
Brown Paper Tickets. I believe The Garage will have them on sale in October. Mm-hmm. So check my Twitter and my Facebook, and I advertise like crazy.
Great. So it's Dorian Faust, and you can find her on Facebook. So facebook.com/DorianFaust. I think that's really exciting. People should definitely check out your website, queenofindieburlesque.com. Thank you, Dorian.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
And now I'm standing with Kitty Stryker, who also has an act, a military clown act in Come and Glitter. We're also going to talk about your work with consentculture.com. That's really exciting. We've been talking about that a lot lately, especially with some of the discussion around Slut Walk. And you just got back from Catalyst Con. How was it?
It was really intense and really amazing. There were a lot of excellent presentations. It was so filled with stuff. I'm still kind of decompressing. I was kind of on the run from Friday until Sunday.
Well, they try to pack everything into those 3 days, so I imagine. And then, of course, it's all like sexperts. And what do sexperts do in their free time?
Talk a lot more about sex. There's lots of negotiation.
And you did a presentation on fat sex work?
Yes, I did. I did one with Jolene Parton and Kelly Shibari. It was really good. It was received very well. We were a little nervous because it was at 9 in the morning and we weren't sure how many people would show up. But we actually had a really crowded room and got to talk a lot about the various types of sex work and how being fat or considered fat for that type of sex work really relates to how people treat you as a sex worker, how the industry treats you as a sex worker. So it was a really good conversation.
Well, I imagine that, like with anything, because it's not part of the dominant culture norm, that sometimes it makes you more vulnerable to a lot of stuff.
I can only speak really from my experience, but my experience is that in the UK it was really acceptable, and I wasn't really treated like a fat sex worker. I was just treated as a sex worker. And they treated me.
Healthy.
Yeah, they treated me with a lot of respect, which was awesome.
Woo, respect, imagine.
I know, crazy, right? Then I moved back to the Bay Area, and I was getting things like death threats for saying that I deserve to be paid for my work, which was so different.
Death threats?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a lot of...
Oh, how awful.
I've been thinking a lot about why that would be, and I think it's because as a fat woman, you're expected to be desperate.
Right.
And especially if you're a fat sex worker, you must be desperate. So if you say no to a client, if you turn someone down, they feel really rejected. And so that probably has a lot to do with their confidence, and they feel like, well, if even this desperate person is turning me down, what does that say about me?
So it's extra threatening for them, and then they react violently and or threateningly.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, I tend to be kind of a smartass about it and be like, oh, whatever, dude, like, go ahead, come on, let's see what happens. And I mean, it's all via email, so, like, they're never going to find me.
Right.
I'm not really worried about it.
Right.
But it's interesting that that's an automatic reaction.
Hmm. Interesting. And so as a sex worker, don't you think that there's kind of this exoticism of all kinds of differentnesses?
Yeah, there definitely is. I mean,
and I don't know if that's positive or negative. I mean, I can imagine it going both ways.
Yeah, it really goes both ways. I mean, I think that fatness can be seen as a fetish, but it can also be seen as a preference, you know, and the line between the two is very difficult to tell sometimes.
Mm-hmm. And how do clients treat you? Like, do they say, this is exactly what I'm looking for, this is what I want?
I find that the clients that I tend to see and get on with...
You mean the ones that you say yes to?
The ones that I say yes to.
Right.
I'm very selective now.
Oh, of course, as you should be. Oh, my God.
I find that they... It's a non-issue, and I think that's why I like them. They're not, like... overwhelmed by my fatness, like, oh my God, you're fat and it's so sexy and I'm so into your belly and blah blah blah, but they just they love my body, but in a non-objectifying way,
right?
And most of the time they're really into my brain, and that's really what they're coming for, so
hot,
so to speak.
That's so great. And you said also that there were positive aspects of being a fat sex worker.
Yeah, I mean, I think that for a lot of the fat sex workers that I've spoken to, they found a lot of confidence and a lot of sexual pride through being fat sex workers, because while you do deal with a lot of bullshit, you deal with a lot of bullshit anyway in society at large, but in fat sex work, you're also valued, and that can be enough to sort of bypass everything else. Like, you have this very clear, like, oh... people find me sexy. People want to purchase my services, or they want to buy my porn, and they want to see me have sex on stage or whatever, and they love my body and they love me. That's really affirming. So I think that a lot of people I know might have felt uncomfortable in their bodies when they started sex work, and through sex work found a lot of confidence. I mean, that's, you know, specific types of people who have that journey, but I think that for people who have that journey, it's a really positive one.
I've actually heard exactly the same thing from some of the scholarship beneficiaries of Bombshell Betty's. She does this, like, burlesque training. People who are like, oh my God, I thought I was ugly, I thought I was fat, I thought all these things, but people are screaming for me to take my clothes off.
I'm doing that.
Oh my God, really?
Yes.
That's so exciting.
I had to say that I couldn't do a solo scene this time because I have so many other projects going on, but I'm going to be part of the group scene that's happening in October, so...
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, it should be kind of fun. I love our scene.
Oh, good. Yay. Oh, well, let's talk about your scene here in Come and Glitter.
Oh, so I'm working with Denali Winter, and we're doing a military scene that's poking fun at the seriousness of BDSM. My experiences in the kink community has been that if I don't want to wear a corset and high-heeled boots and be a serious dominant.
And all black.
And all black. Or maybe red. Maybe. Then I'm not a real dominant.
Right.
And I love to screw around with that. Anybody who's seen a show with me in it before will know that I like to screw with those archetypes.
Cupcakes, I'm just saying.
There is a cupcake involved in this scene as well.
Oh, is there really?
Yes. I like messiness in my scenes, but I also like playfulness. And I think that we focus so much in the BDSM community on who has the best technique with flogging and who's the best at piercings and like flashy stuff. And I like to focus more on the psychological. Mm. And I find that playfulness is really good for that, because the actual acts, I mean, I think the acts we have in our scene is like spanking. You know, it's nothing big. It's nothing like flashy. But when
you're not setting anyone on fire.
We're not setting anyone on fire, you know, minimal blood. And I think that people don't really know how to react to that, because they're like, oh, well, spanking, I can do that at home. And I kind of like that. I like people being like, oh. But then if you create this beautiful structure, this beautiful container around that, you can show how something as simple as spanking can be incredibly powerful if you create a scene around it and you use psychological stuff to really make it sing.
Tell me about consent culture. What are you guys working on with consentculture.com?
Currently, I'm doing some blogging. I've been trying to expand consent culture to focus on things not just relating to BDSM, but also relating to the poly community and the sex positive community. Currently, like, my last article was about work and the value of work and the sort of volunteerism culture that we have, especially in sex communities, because a lot of us don't have much money. But how we can really show people that their work is valued, even or almost especially if they're a volunteer. I think that sometimes it becomes really easy to use volunteers to the point that they're drained and they burn out. And I want to talk a little bit more about that, about how we can make it a sustainable culture that gives everybody energy instead of making everyone feel exhausted and stressed out.
Right. Well, I think especially with really hard issues like women's shelters and rape crisis hotlines and all of that stuff, not only is it draining because of the issues that you're constantly tackling, like helping people heal from sexual assault and crisis counseling and all of that stuff. I mean, you're just slogging through this endless field of pain and you're really trying to help people. But then also, there's not often a large budget to take care of you financially.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, I wanted to talk more, and we'll be talking more about self-care, taking care of yourself as an activist and not spreading yourself too thin. Because I think that that's something that's really easy to do.
Because everyone needs saving right now.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. You know,
and I'm going to do it.
It's very exhausting. Again. And I think a lot of activists end up having the feeling of, well, if I don't do it, it's not going to get done.
Right.
And that is an incredibly overwhelming feeling, especially if you have any intersectionality to your activism, then suddenly you're like, oh my God, there's all of these things that need doing right now, and there's no one to do it but me. And that's just very overwhelming. So I think it's important to take a step back and be like, okay, how can we take care of ourselves? How can we take care of our community in ways that are sustainable?
How do I ask for what I want? How do I make time for bubble baths?
Exactly. I'm actually hoping that in the next couple of months I'll be starting a Kickstarter for a consent culture zine that people can have in their play spaces, in their sex spaces, you know, whatever kind of venue. I feel like having a physical zine that says, talks about consent in multiple different ways would be something that would be a really helpful resource. We're hoping to make some posters for dungeons to have as well that sort of say, hey, here are some core tenets of consent culture.
Are you also using consentculture.com to deconstruct rape culture?
Definitely. I mean, I wanted to create an option to rape culture and say, okay, well, if we don't like rape culture, we don't like entitlement culture, what are we going to do instead?
You know Reed Mihalko and his work teaching frat boys how to get laid more often and not be a jerk?
Yeah.
The way he asks for consent actually is not awkward. It's kind of sexy and fluid, actually. And then, you know, I just love it that you feel more safe when you just ask someone first.
Yeah, exactly. I think that more consent actually makes everyone feel better.
Well, Kitty Stryker, it's so fun to have you on the show again. Is there anything else you'd like to share?
We have
listeners in Kazakhstan and Armenia and Azerbaijan.
Well, I mean, I guess I would say you can start a Cum and Glitter or some other crazy, sexy, fun anywhere you are. You know, it's just a question of adapting to what works for you. It could be a private show. It could be a porn deconstruction meeting. It could be anything.
And what local performers are into.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I think that it's really great to be a part of a show that utilizes local talent and community in a way that makes them feel really, really good about what they're doing.
Right. You could do it in your living room, even.
Totally. Yep.
How can people find you?
Well, I'm at kittystriker.com. That's KittyStryker.com. There's a blog on there. There's a lot of information about workshops that I do and that sort of thing. And then, of course, there's consentculture.com, which is my blog specifically about rape culture and how to fix it.
You started that with Maggie Mayhem.
I did indeed, yes. I'm now hoping to get some more people involved so that we can have a collective structure on going forward so we can send more people out for workshops.
Mm, that's exciting. So it's more like blogs and calendars and workshops and...
Yeah, it's mostly focused on that right now and reactions to things that are going on in society.
Mm. Fascinating. Do you know anyone who would be interested in consentculture.com being a contributor? Contact Kitty Stryker or, of course, send me a message and I'd be glad to hook you up with her. Thank you so much for coming on Sexploration with Monica, Kitty.
Thanks so much for having me.
You can subscribe to Sexploration with Monica on iTunes and have new episodes delivered automatically. Or download free podcasts at sexplorationwithmonica.com.